you should get most people join remotely, but I like in person. And
is it always in this room? It used to be on 3. So, but we moved up. I moved pension up here on 8. So, since I'm up here with banking. So, yeah.
All of the finance teams that come in, they're online?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, everybody's on. Yeah, so you could just join online. Oops. Sorry. Didn't mean to do that. Sorry.
All right. It is time for the April meeting of the Tucson Supplemental Retirement System Board of Trustees. Lisa, would you please call the roll?
Mark Rubin?
Here.
Dave Samer?
Here.
Sylvia Amparano?
Here.
John O'Hare? Terry Train?
Here.
Charlton Farron?
Here.
Angel Ozumalam?
Okay, yes. Count five?
Yes.
So we have a quorum. On our agenda under administrative discussions is the election update, but we're going to take that matter out of order. Before we give Sylvia Amparano a chance to introduce herself, I want to thank Kimberly Swanberg for her service, brief though it was. And I assume that we will have some kind of a plaque or something to thank her for her service. Is that right, Lisa?
Yes.
Okay. And we'll take care of that at a future meeting, but please make note of that. Sylvia, you're a bit far from the camera, but that's okay. Can you introduce yourself and just give us a bit of the highlights of your life?
Sure. Okay, my name is Sylvia Amparano. I work at Tucson Water. I'm the deputy director over there, so I oversee half the department. And I've been with the city over 27 years. At one point in my career, I was the finance director and was seated at this board previously. And so my background is mostly in finance, accounting, and I oversee customer service, maintenance, conservation, and stormwater resources, and I always forget about all the business and organizational support services, which is the financial planning, rate-making process, and all of the other technology stuff that we're going through over there. So happy to be here.
Blake, thank you. We're glad to have you. Next up is the... next up is the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Who was that?
Terry.
Terry.
Okay, thanks, Terry. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you. Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, Lisa, would you call a vote, please? Oh, I'm sorry. Dave, you have your hand up.
Yes, I just had one question. I think we've maybe covered it before, but on the budget versus actuals, it looks like maybe there's some account grouping issues. Like if you look at the expenses, professional services in the budget has a large number. And I wonder if part of that maybe should be payments to participants.
I can look into that for you. If I can, I'm not sure what it is. I can look into that for you.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like maybe there's some account groupings out. It's just a question I've wanted to ask from the last couple of meetings and kept forgetting.
Okay. I can look into that.
Let's do this. Terry, are you willing to modify your motion to make the same motion and strip out the budget versus actuals, and we can take that up at the next meeting?
Yes, and so can we correct that? So the motion would be to, again, remove that particular item for additional review and moving forward with the rest.
Okay. And is there who – I don't remember who seconded. Was it you, Tarlene?
I can second the new motion. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay. Any additional discussion?
I know a lot of things, Dave. Work day artifacts, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Lisa, would you call the roll, the vote, please?
Yes. Mark Rubin?
Aye.
Dave Samer?
Aye.
Sylvia Amparano?
Abstain. I'll sit here.
Okay. John O'Hare? Terry Train?
Aye.
Charlton Farron? Sorry.
That's okay. Aye.
And Angel Ozumalam?
Okay. The vote carries. I think that was 4 aye and 1. Sylvia, did you recuse?
Yes.
I assume that was because you weren't here for the meeting in March?
Correct.
Good. Okay. All right. I think the only substantive item on our agenda today is this dual employment transfer of service issue, which came up last month. Lisa, do you want to refresh our memory briefly about the issue and then explain what has happened since the last meeting?
Yes. Please. So I do have the memo that I've written, and I'm sorry, I'm having trouble getting into my computer. So we do have the employee in that is in question that who has submitted for this this transfer in the audience today. So what is in question is that the staff did reach out to ASRS for some clarification. And ASRS doesn't have a position in the transfer either way. So they said that TSRS is a separate system, and it is up to TSRS on whether they choose to take the transfer over. If it was the other way, ASRS, because they have their own statute in the Arizona Revised Statutes, they cannot do it the other way. So if it was TSRS transferring over to ASRS, it would not be able to be done. But because TSRS does not have that rule in place, it is up to the board to choose whether to do it or not. So this is it is up to the board here, but it is a decision that we should make sure that we should, it's consistent across all members that we are consistent with all members, that it's also, doubt that this issue would come up very often, a dual employment situation. Mr. Keltner was a part-time employee over at the Vail District. We did make that discovery, and he did have permission from the City of Tucson supervisor to have that employment. So we did look into that also. That was a question that had come up in the last meeting. So he did have permission to have secondary employment. So it's just that part-time employment that he had also was able to get pension time. So it's up to the board at this point to make a decision on whether we want to allow him to.
Mr. Chair, may I add a brief comment?
Yeah, please.
Good morning, board members. This item is in front of the board really for an interpretation of the city code. When there is an issue that is not specifically addressed in the city code, the board is the body that has the power to construe and interpret the rules. And as Lisa mentioned, the construction or the interpretation has to be something that can be applied uniformly to anyone else who may fall into this dual employment situation. I agree it's rare. I don't believe it's ever come up in the time that I've worked with the city. But it's important to note that if there was dual employment within the city, two positions within the city, there would not be double service credit. The service credit is limited to 1 year of service for a 12-month period. The same would be true if both positions were covered by ASRS. That system also would not allow double credit. And so I think this is It's simply a gap in the city code language, and to be consistent with the rules that apply to city employees, I would recommend that the board consider saying that no situation should generate dual credit for the same 12-month period.
So if I'm understanding what you said, Cassie, if the employee had two jobs with either the city or the state, there could be no dual credit. But
that's correct.
And if his employment with the city and the state caused him to attempt to get dual credit with the state has said, we don't do that.
Yes, that's accurate.
Okay, but the request here today is to grant the dual credit because it's state to city, and there's nothing in the code that expressly says that can't be done.
Correct. The code addresses the accrual of service for employment with the city, and then separately talks about allowing members to transfer in their time from the state system. Those transfer provisions do not have a provision that states that that transfer cannot result in dual credit, double credit for the same period of time. That's the piece that is silent in the city code.
Okay. But it may be that as written, that it's written the way it's written because there's an assumption that an employee will have worked for the state and then move to the city, to move to employment with the city and want to combine the service with the city.
Yes, that's right. And that happens relatively frequently in both directions. So that is the intention of the provision.
Okay. Okay. Did I see a hand up? Yeah, Tarleton. Oh, Tarleton and then Sylvia.
Yeah, I view this as kind of two items. One item is the case at hand with the employee and their situation given what was already established in the code. And then the other item is moving forward, how do we adopt a policy to ensure that, you know, whatever action we take here doesn't set a precedent that we don't want to be as a precedent. And so I view the gap as significant. I looked into other pensions, and I didn't see any other pensions that expressly allow transferring of credit to be received as in kind of that dual framework. And it can open a pretty big can of worms in the sense of administratively, actuarially, people could try to not engineer per se, but try to reach their levels of service sooner by taking on extra work, and, you know, that kind of thing. It kind of becomes a headache with years of service too. I mean, I wouldn't expect this to happen frequently. It hasn't, but it kind of opens the door if we set that precedent without following it up with kind of a policy clarification. So, yeah, most plans have that limitation that you can only earn 1 year of service per calendar year. And I think in moving forward that we'd want to do that. That said, in this particular case, the employee did not have that clarity in our policy. They took significant qualifying steps to be able to do the transfer and demonstrating compliance with the administrative directives. They've already terminated their prior employment, so the transfer itself wouldn't be as administratively complex as it could have been. The concurrent employment is kind of where it can really get hairy with payroll dates and that kind of thing, like tracking that month to month, is definitely what we'd want to avoid. So I'd recommend that we do separate motions, one for the employee's case, and that if we approve it, which I would be in favor for, that we do so stating that we do not, or that we're wanting to not make it precedential to the extent possible. And that we also give direction for updating the provisions to make it clear for all employees moving forward that only 1 year of service counts per calendar year, including transfers moving forward.
Thank you. Cassie, if we were going to bifurcate, as Tarleton has suggested, do we make a do we then deal with the second part, or do we recommend to the city that to the city council that they modify the code to clarify the issue?
Yeah, if it's taken as two separate matters, the board would prepare and recommend a specific amendment to the code to add additional language to that transfer provision. So,
thanks. I didn't think it was our place to
change
the law. Yeah, but that's okay. All right, more discussion.
That was the question I had, was administratively how we would do that. That we don't have the authority to do the changes in code. It would be a recommendation from the board to mayor and council. But also, I don't know that we have the authority now with the way it's written to approve the request at hand without a change to code. That's a question.
Cassie, do you want to speak to that?
I think that's a good point that Sylvia is making, because the code is silent. It's not specifically authorized and it is not specifically prohibited. However, I think that is the board's role here, is that even in the situation, the current employee's request situation, the board has to make a determination how the code should be applied to this particular situation. And we have two pieces of guidance, although they are not definitive. One is that dual employment in two city positions would not result in dual credit under the system. And secondly, dual employment under the state system, which could happen more easily because you could have two separate employers in the state system, and that situation also would not result in dual credit under the state system. So it is more of, in my mind, more of a leap to grant the credit based on the available information, but that is the board's determination to make.
All right. Did I see another hand? Terry?
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with Sylvia. I don't believe that we should or that we have the authority to grant this. And so I would not support granting it.
Thank you. Any additional discussion? Okay. Hearing none.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just briefly, I do think that as a board, we can at least not so much exercise a transitional discretion on fully interpreting it, but make as a recommendation to the city as they update this code that they could kind of ratify the decision to grant it themselves too, that we could recommend to them that this employee, you know, having done all this, could be approved, and then they can make that policy change. I just, as a representative of employees, and there was a gap in the provision, I don't see that it would be that detrimental to the board in this particular case to do so. But that's my thought.
On that, I think what I heard Cassie telling us is we have to decide whether this employee is or is not going to receive the transfer credit. That's not, the council's not going to make that decision. That's not their role. And I suspect that rightly or wrongly, we probably have the discretion to grant the request because there's an ambiguity. We don't have the decision-making authority thereafter to change the code, but the city council does not have the jurisdictional authority to decide this individual case. So does that generate any additional discussion?
I do have a concern of setting a precedent if we can't determine that the city is going to make that change to code. that would be my concern. But I do want to advocate for this employee if there's any way possible to do that without setting a precedent. Could we, yeah. Is there a way we could do that?
Mr. Chair, in my view, the short answer to that question is no, because the board is being asked to interpret the code, and the interpretations of the code are not employee specific. The interpretation is about the language and what is allowed or disallowed under the language. And the particular circumstances would not typically play into that interpretation of the language.
Having said that, I suspect that if the board's will was to approve this request and the board thereafter sent a recommendation to the city council to modify the code, you probably end up with a non-presidential decision because you close the door after, and forgive me for the analogy, but you close the door after the cow has left the barn, and there are no more cows that are going to get out of the barn after that. So I suspect if the board's will is to grant the request, you then end up with a likelihood that I shouldn't presume what the board will do. I suspect the board would recommend clarifying the issue, and I suspect the council would listen. One of the issues when you draft statutes and laws is that you don't always have the ability to consider every possible permutation. That's why we have courts, and in this case, a board acting in a quasi-judicial manner. But any additional discussion?
We need
a motion.
I agree, Mr. Chair.
Hang on. Hal?
Good morning. Okay. Good morning, everybody. Here's my concern. The gentleman at the table, sorry, I don't remember your name right now, is concerned about us setting precedent. If this is our concern, should we then modify the code as needed to take care of situations like this should they arise in the future, and then deal with the situation? Because to deal with the situation first is to assume that city council will approve whatever change we put forth to them. And so in the event they don't approve what we put forth, because we send rate changes and they don't approve them for the most part. So for us, if we assume they will, then yes, let's go and deal with this. But if they don't, then we have set precedent. Am I making sense?
Mr.
Jesse,
Chair,
are you? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, is there a way that we could make a decision and then set as a board policy, not change the city code, that how we'll handle this as a board, how we choose to interpret it kind of more as a policy, and also make that recommendation to the code to change it?
I don't want this to run too far afield. The board cannot have a policy that is inconsistent with its own interpretation of the code. So I do think it is possible to grant this particular request, then prepare an amendment to the code that applies to all transfer requests filed May 1 of 26 or later. And in all likelihood, in my experience, mayor and council will approve that code amendment. In my history with the system, the mayor and the council have given a lot of deference to the board's recommendations on code language, which is completely different than what we see necessarily on the code, the contribution issue. But typically the mayor and council do take the recommendations for code language. And so, I think that the employee's request is timely. It's a matter of whether that individual is vested in a pension at this time or not. I do think that should be addressed. But I don't think that the board itself should take inconsistent positions by granting that request and then adopting a policy that is inconsistent.
Furthermore, if we've identified an issue in the code, our job is to recommend that the mm-hmm. code issue be fixed. It's not to adopt a policy that a future board can decide not to adhere to, for one reason or another. I don't think that we can, if we recommend a change to the code, I cannot imagine the city not saying, well, I don't expect they'd say thank you, but I think they would thank you for clarifying what is clearly a type of situation that the code didn't contemplate. Things happen. But I don't think that you can change the code and then come back to this situation, because then you're basically saying, well, the code says this, but we're going to do something different because it arose before the code change. So that gets complicated. So any additional comments?
Just thank you all for getting us through that.
I have a question. This is Sylvia. I don't want to assume, but I'm assuming that the actuarial calculation is still going to be in play to make the system whole with the purchase of service credits, correct?
Yes, that is included in the code that these transfers have to be actuarially sufficient to support the service credit.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chair, I motion that we grant this request to this employee to be able to transfer the ASRS as requested.
Okay, is there a second? Well, without a second, that motion fails. Is there another motion?
I move that we not approve the current request by this employee as submitted.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second.
That was Dave? Thank you, Dave. Okay. Any further discussion? All right, Lisa, would you call the vote?
If we're not concerned, but we've cited where the city will not allow someone holding two positions to have be accounted for double time. We have someone who technically held two positions and would like for the city to accept credits from the other position held at the same time that person was holding position with the city to make up for time that so he could become vested in our system. What do we see is wrong with that? Or do we see anything wrong with that?
I think those issues were discussed. Just to be clear, if the employee had two jobs with the city, the code would preclude the additional credits. If he had two jobs with the state system would preclude the dual credits. And if he was trying to transfer city credits to the state has advised us that they would not provide, that they would not validate the dual credit. So it appears that what we have is a situation where we have a code provision that simply doesn't address this permutation. A dual employee who is moving credits from the state to the city. And, you know, We've got a motion on the floor now. The prior motion failed for want of a second. I'm not sure what else to say. But maybe others have comments.
I think the concern, Angel, is is that as a policy, it's not the most sound because it could be manipulated by people in the future. You could have people trying to reach their years of retirement service early, by working multiple jobs for, say, 5 years or something. It'd be harder on the administrative side to kind of account for that. I just don't know of any plans that allow it from a direct policy standpoint.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, Lisa, would you call the vote, please? This is, and recall, this is a motion to deny the employee request.
Mark Rubin?
Aye.
Dave Samer?
Aye.
Sylvia Amparano?
Aye.
John O'Hare?
Absent.
Terry Train?
Aye.
Charlton Farron?
Nay.
Angela Zamalam?
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries. Cassie, do we need a motion to approve a recommendation for a code change?
I would appreciate that because that would be the basis for drafting an amendment to the code for the council. And I did put a draft motion for this item in the chat.
Okay, let's do this then. Is there take a moment, everybody, look in the chat and read the draft motion. And then I'd like to entertain I've got some time constraints. I'd like to entertain a motion to recommend that this provision be recommended to the City Council. Do I hear that motion?
I'm moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this issue? And this is a provision, a motion to send to the City Council the language that is in the chat recommending that the City Council adopt this language in the City Code, which at least in theory should eliminate the potential for this issue arising again. So, do we have a motion? I'm sorry, did we get a motion in a second? We did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussion? Lisa, would you call the vote, please?
All right. Mark Rubin?
Aye.
Dave Samer?
Aye.
Sylvia Amparano?
Aye.
John O'Hare? Terry Train?
Aye.
Charlton Farron?
Aye.
Angela Zamalam?
Aye.
Okay. All right. Thank you all for your participation. This is not an easy issue. I think we won't be dealing with it again, assuming that the City Council recognizes that we found a loophole, not by plan, and they will likely close it. Okay. Lisa, we have a call to the audience. Is there anyone in the audience who wants to speak?
Yes, sir. Just thank you, everybody, for your time. I totally understand the reason why you guys made this decision. I appreciate it.
We appreciate it, too. These are never easy issues, and I wasn't certain that you were the person who was here on this issue, but I thought so. They're tough issues, but we thank you for your presence and for your good cheer. All right, Lisa, what do we need to discuss about future agenda items other than they'll be on the agenda?
Nothing at this moment. Okay. They're for May, so we'll probably put them on for May.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else that we need to address this morning? All right. Hearing nothing, and with apologies for having to run, let's have a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none, would you call the vote?
Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Dave Seymour.
Aye.
Sylvia Amparano.
Aye.
John O'Hare. Terry Train.
Aye.
Charlton Farron.
Aye.
And Ajel Osamala.
Aye.
All right, thank you all again. We will see you next month in May. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, bye. Lisa?
Oh, I tried. Thank you.
Your code changes, are they still pending? Can we add a code change?
Yes.
Okay. Is it in the pipeline yet? Or normally what I would do is write a code change, show it to the board at the May meeting for an official approval. Mm-hmm. But I also don't want to slow down your council process.
Okay. So how about I set up a meeting with you?
That's fine.
Okay. I'll get with you then. And
all right, thanks.
How about that? Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Did we leave Ryan?
That's good. Yeah, I have a question. Okay. Oh, okay. Morris. I'm Black 11.